When you were a little kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Do you remember that dream, that thought? Think back to unashamedly misquote the friendly giant. Think back. Think way back. When you were little, what future dreams did you dream? I wanted to be a cowboy. You got that, cowboy, not girl. I grew up with early TV, which sported such gems as The Lone Ranger, Roy Rogers and his Wonder Horse, Trigger, Hopalong Cassidy, whom my father delighted calling Castlelong Hoppity, and so on. And it was as a cowboy, because the only female in the lot was the dainty little Dale Evans, and to me, she was just a second-class tag-along. I wanted the real deal. So I ask you to ask yourself, what did you want to be? What might you still want to be, to find, to see, to become? Jesus asks John's disciples, Andrew and Peter, essentially the same question. What are you looking for? And not really knowing, they beg for time as they want to know him better and so ask, where are you staying? And Jesus invites them to come and see. What are you looking for? Come and see. A call and a response woven throughout our human lives. Because God is always asking, what are you looking for? Always inviting us to come and see, to feel and to be with God, with ourselves, and of course with one another. Both our gospel and first reading invite us, in fact, to do the same, to think about something many might imagine belongs or concerns only to the religious type, our calling, our vocation, from the Latin word vocare. But you know, they're wrong to think that, because a vocation is simply that, a human calling, be it over a lifetime or even in the proverbial moment. It's that which gets you up in the morning and gets you going. I particularly love how Frederick Buechner puts this, so I want to share it with you, even though it's a tad bit long, but it puts flesh on what I'm trying to talk about. Buechner says that whatever your passion is, ask yourself, is it worth dying for? Can I give my life to this? And he goes on, there is a kind of relentless spontaneity about it, a kind of terrific sense of conviction, so that if you're Matthew in the tax office, you lay down your slide rule and your pencil, you don't even finish the form you happen to be working on at the moment, but just push back your chair and start heading for the door without even bothering to pick up your coat hanging over by the water cooler. And then you step out there forever without looking back once over your shoulder and start following the way you have chosen. Buechner defines a vocation as the place God calls you to, the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. The place God calls you to, the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. That's a rather heavy description. I grant you that might not fit everyone's sense of call, but it will some folks. Barbara Brown Taylor suggests one's calling is simply to be God's person in the world, whether that be a pastry chef or the Prime Minister of Canada. It may be you who choose a particular vocation, or that maybe it chooses you, or maybe you choose each other. It doesn't really matter. But we all need, and you know, we all deserve a sense of call to something or someone, a role where we are needed and valued and wanted. The trick is to find that particular niche or niches because, well, to put it bluntly, the call is not always clear, and it's not always, as some of you will know well, not always reasonable and not always straightforward, as the disciples' call was and as Isaiah's call was. Speaking of Isaiah, "The Lord called me before I was born," he exclaims. And then he goes on to wonder if he actually heard God right. But God says, "Yep, you did. It's you I'm talking to." From time to time, he again wonders and checks in with God, each time hearing another version of, "You are my servant, in whom I will be glorified." A clear and strong confirmation not many of us will be blessed to get. Lots of things can get in the way of discerning your vocation. It can hold us back from living into the divine whisperings that are happening deep within. Fear is a biggie, don't have to tell you that. Along with the many different ways fear manifests itself, such as insecurity, judgment, power, and control, and can hold us back from even beginning to ask the question of ourselves, what am I looking for? What really matters? A calling might parallel what we do as our job, or even overlap. For instance, being a counselor and at the same time feeling called to do that very thing. For some, a call is direct. For others, not so much. We might try on different ways, different expressions, different careers before we find that calling or that purpose. And it can be mightily complicated if we are somehow not given permission to follow that interior call, whatever it may be. At the dangerous risk of talking too much about myself, which is certainly not what a sermon is ever intended to be, I know a little about this, and I want to share it with you for clarification. Way back in 1961, when I was 14 and a member of an Episcopal youth group, our extremely progressive priest had group members of the youth group, read the gospel to the congregation on particular Sunday mornings. Well, my first and last occasion to do this will be forever in my soul. As I was reading from the Gospel of Mark, and honestly, I haven't a clue what it was about or what the passage was, I was suddenly overcome with the knowledge that that was what I was to do. That was my calling, my vocation, to be a priest. Again, this was 1961, and how many women priests can you remember in 1961? We weren't a churchy family, and I was afraid, I was terrified to tell my parents, thinking they'd assume I was going to be a nun. And that was the time when the flying nun, remember, Sally Field was all a rage on TV. But in fairness, on one Sunday, or one summer in university, I spent 2 weeks at a Benedictine convent in Mount Angel, Oregon, to kind of, okay, in all fairness, God, put my toe in and test the water. But I left knowing that wasn't it, and feeling frustrated and very angry. And this went on for years. So much so that I quit church, and I quit everything to do with church. Not God, church. Still needing to eat and live somewhere, I became a cop, and then a probation supervisor. All the time hearing and feeling that quiet but persistent whisper in my soul. It all came to a head on a particular Wednesday at a place I'd never been before, the Vancouver School of Theology, where I had driven up from California to attend a pastoral care meeting. It was at lunch, and while sitting next to some priests, some male clergy, of course, from the Diocese of Caribou, I heard them talking about a Pat Reed, Patricia Reed, one of their priests, and I nearly fell out of my chair. Like the Japanese soldier hiding in the jungle, unaware the war had ended, I'd missed the fact and the reality that women were and had been, for a while, allowed to be priests. God's will had finally been acknowledged, and even finally allowed. Barbara Brown Taylor believes Jesus' invitation to Andrew and Peter to come and see is an invitation into a relationship. It's always relationship, people. It's always relationship. A relationship with and a vision of the world. Not just a set of instructions, but a real invitation to abide with and to stay with Christ, to become more like Him and share that experience with others. He called them together and He gathered them together to Himself, thereby making a brand new community that had never existed, which then followed his lead in tangible action. Action. Healing people, offering hospitality, worshiping together, ministering to the sick, comforting the grieving, and so on. They weren't asked or expected to believe anything at all right off the bat, contrary to the way a lot of religion expects us to. No, it was first a pattern of shared communal behavior that flowed from being together, and from that belonging, a new and a transformed vision of God and a whole new sense of belief, a new belief system sprang into being. A vivid example, in my own personal opinion, of the way God's call is best and most clearly felt in and through community. We need each other. As I experienced personally, right here in church, John recognizes Jesus as the Christ, the Anointed One. The disciples somehow glimpse Jesus for who he is, and in doing so, begin to recognize themselves. Andrew goes to Peter and says, "We have found the Messiah." And in doing so, they find their calling, their personal own vocation. Calls from God aren't always religious by any means, or what we call and consider religious. But we don't get out of it that easily, since all of earth is holy ground and God's Spirit fills it all. As Buechner writes, there is no event so commonplace but that God is present within it. Always hidden, always leaving you room to recognize him or not to recognize him. But all the more fascinatingly because of that, all the more compellingly and hauntingly. Everything we do and see is a key moment in our lives. Everything from the moment we get up in the morning to the moment we go to bed, and maybe even then, because the Holy One's Spirit infuses it all. Everything we do and see is part of our search for God, because deep down we sense there's more to life than even religion has to lead us to. Yes, some people visit a Tibetan monastery or volunteer in a mission in Honduras, but the last place most of us look for God is literally right under our feet. In everyday actions, in chance happenings, and daily encounters, there's simply no spiritual treasure to be found apart from our bodily life on earth. I'm going to say that one again. There is no spiritual treasure to be found apart from our bodily life on this earth. As 13th century mystic Mathilde of Magdeburg admitted, the day of my spiritual awakening was the day I saw and knew that I saw all things in God and God in all things. As I've said, Christ's query, "What are you looking for?" and his invitation, "Come and see," are a call and response woven into the tapestry of our lives. They never stop. God's always calling us to come closer to grace, to God's transforming love. And I couldn't begin to say this as well as dear, good old Frederick Buechner, who once again puts it so marvelously. I'm going to end with this quote. He says, "Listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery that it is. In the boredom and the pain of it, no less than in the excitement and gladness, touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it, because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments. And life itself is grace."